Welcome back to the 414 Project and my ongoing conversation with homosexual activist and blogger from Think Progress, Zach Ford. You know, I've spoken to groups and I've called this the great dilemma for Christians. As Christians, of course, we understand the need to bring others who are caught up in sin, no matter what sin it is, that would include homosexuality, to a saving knowledge of the grace of Jesus Christ. In order to do that, you really don't want those people you are reaching out to see you as an opponent. And whenever we engage this issue of homosexuality in the political square, it's virtually impossible to avoid that perception. We're on one side, they're on the other. So it leads a Christian to think, well, maybe I shouldn't engage this issue politically. Maybe I should only engage it at the personal level and try to reach out with the saving grace of Jesus Christ and the truth of his ministry and his gospel. But the flip side of that coin is, if Christians do not engage this issue politically, the homosexual agenda as it exists in this country has made very clear its intent to deprive Christians of the ability to speak that love of Jesus, to speak that redemptive power to those who practice homosexuality, because they term that hate speech. So if we do engage it, we run the risk of being seen as opponents. If we don't engage it, we lose our ability to legally express the hope of Christ in the face of homosexual sin. It is a great dilemma. And this is the very reason why I asked Mr. Ford the question, do you think it's even possible for these two sides, Orthodox Christian viewpoint and the LGBT community, to peacefully coexist? Here's what he said.
Well, I mean, I would argue that in many ways we already are. I mean, there is violence against the gay community in a lot of ways, but it's not necessarily coming from the most devout Christians. But, you know, in the scenario that you just painted, Peter, what I see is you have, for people who are heterosexual, at least one option to have a sexual relationship and a lifetime partner and someone to raise a family with. You get that one woman. You get that wife that you get to build a life with. And for gay people, under that plan, they get zero. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is a form of rejection by sort of imposing that belief on others and saying, you know what, because you're gay, if you really want to honor God, sorry, you don't get anybody.
I get that. I was actually talking to, and I forgive me, I can't remember his name. He has a ministry. He's a former homosexual, and he made that same point to me when I brought that point up. I guess my follow up to that would be: Would you hold that consistently then when you look at people with different sexual orientations than either you or I? People who say their sexual orientation is polyamorous, would you suggest that we are being discriminatory towards them to not allow them the opportunity to have multiple spouses in the form of polygamy, or someone with an even more we might use the term depraved sexual desire for an incestuous relationship? If that is what the orientation is of the individual, if that's what the urge is, are we denying them and being bigots and being discriminators the right to find fulfillment if we say no? Do we really believe in, as I know the LGBT community calls it, full marriage equality? Do we really believe in full marriage equality, or are we just talking opening it up to two members of the same sex? How far do we go with this?
Sure. You know, I'm usually not particularly compelled by these sort of slippery slope arguments, particularly because I think that you draw some comparisons that aren't particularly fair. You know, sexual orientation is something that we know is psychological. We're understanding more and more that it does have biological components, things that happen either in the genes themselves or as the genes develop in the womb. And so it's really an inherent part of a person's identity. And the reason that, like, coming out, you know, we just saw Senator Rob Portman from Ohio today talking right. about how he was moved by his son coming out to him. That experience, it defines so much about who you are. You know, you spend your whole, I didn't come out until after high school, and so I had that whole process through high school where everybody else was dating and it was making sense to them, and it just wasn't to me because I hadn't figured that out. It's really a core part of a person's identity. And what we know about sort of the other things you described, they just aren't. You know, the people who engage in polygamy and polyamory, as far as I know, it doesn't come from a particular part of their core identity. It's more of a preference, and certainly it's not fair to describe pedophilia as a sexual orientation because it's not. It's what we call a paraphilia, and it's a disorder, and in both pedophilia and often in the cases of incest, the reason we ban that is because usually it violates consent, and it gets into a whole lot of other issues. And so
none
of those are really parallel to sexual orientation, which is basically like, you know, who are you capable of finding love with? I think it's just a much more basic, innate thing than those other comparisons.
Now, obviously, people who engage in those other behaviors are going to disagree with that. Jerry Sandusky felt very strongly that his was a natural predisposition, and you have lawsuits out there from the MAP community, the minor attracted persons. You're seeing these stories out there. So, again, I'm not trying to say that the two are identical. I'm just saying we're going to have to confront the same arguments from other communities that use that same justification. This is a natural predisposition, and I feel this way, and so this is the way I find love. How can you discriminate against me? I just don't see how we can accept the Ellen DeGeneres argument, which she made famously in talking about Sarah Palin, that we need to learn to love people for who they are and learn and let them love who they want to love. I don't know how we turn around if we accept that logic and say to the polygamist, well, we're not going to do that for you, or those that believe their sexual identity is wrapped up in incestuous relationships or wrapped up in minor attracted persons relationships. And to a further degree, let me ask you a question. I'm really uncomfortable with the idea that we wrap our identity up in our sexual behavior. To me, I'm not defined by my sexual behavior. I'm a male. I was made to be a male, and then from that point, I choose different sexual conducts. I choose which standards I'm going to abide by, and they're led by my predispositions, my interests. But it's not my identity. My identity is separate from sexual behavior because my behavior can be changed.
Well, let me just ask you this question.
Sure.
Do you know who George Washington's wife was?
Martha.
And do you know who Ronald Reagan's wife was?
Nancy.
Correct. So we know that, or at least as far as we know, both of those men were heterosexual and had heterosexual partners. They didn't have to come out as heterosexual. They didn't have to announce it or advocate for it because it was already understood and accepted in society, but they were certainly quite public about it. And every first lady has had a role in the federal government because of her status as the president's wife. And so, you know, being gay is not about trying to force something on society. It's really just trying to have a place at the table and just say, you know, we're here too. And to kind of get back to what we were talking about before, I think, you know, you can impose lots of ideas about what people should be doing. That's usually what I hear most of the conservatives' argument, like, this is the way things have always been, this is the way things should be, this is what's best for children. All those sorts of arguments ignore the fact that there are already millions of same-sex couples, there are hundreds of thousands of children being raised by same-sex couples, and so I think we have to make decisions that are built on what is best for society. Mm-hmm. And you have to look at what we already have in society, and, you know, here are all of these protections for families to make sure that children, you know, have the security of both of their parents financially and for legal decisions and all of these sorts of things, and the children simply don't have them, even though the children are already being raised by same-sex couples. And I don't think there's any feasible way to undo all of that. So, you know, we have to recognize how things already are in the world and make decisions that reflect what's best for that.
So,
and unlike any of the other comparisons that you were making a little bit before, there's a clear need for supporting these families because they already exist. We're hearing about them. We're hearing about the discrimination they're experiencing or the problems that they're facing. And so what's best for them?
Right. And clearly there are polygamist families that are making the same arguments that they've established themselves in their homes and they deserve their equal rights and all of this. It sounds as though the argument becomes, well, we've already gone so far down the path in this social experiment. We can't roll it back now. We might as well just push on through. I don't know that I think that that's really standing on solid footing. But
well, Peter, can I ask you, when do you think the experiment ends? I mean, is there a point where you have enough data to conclude that, you know, sexual orientation is not problematic to society? I'm not convinced that some folks ever believe that there's going to be enough evidence to convince them.
Well, right. And the proof of that would be someone like myself would say we have enough evidence when Jesus affirms that his understanding that marriage as God ordained it was between a man and a woman. To me, right there, that settles the deal. That's all the evidence we need. Now, those that reject that foundation point and have a different foundation point, they're going to come to a different conclusion. So undoubtedly, it depends on where your foundation is constructed. And to me, ultimately, that's where this comes down, which is why I ask you the question about whether or not the two can live in peaceful coexistence. And you said that you think that we are, but the truth is, and this case with Chick-fil-A is a prime example, if we're getting to the point where businesses are not going to be allowed to operate or not going to be allowed to conduct business and sell chicken sandwiches because they hold to a biblical conviction about homosexuality, then I don't think that's peaceful coexistence. I think that we're seeing people discriminated against because of their consciously held conviction in the authority of God's word. When ministers get jailed, when Family Research Council gets shot up because we have this different worldview that's teaching biblical Christians are haters, I don't think that's peaceful coexistence, and it's what worries me.
Well, you know, first of all, let me say that, you know, every LGBT group, including the blog where I write,
right,
immediately condemned the shooting. And I think it also was lost in that is that in 2011, according to the FBI, while the overall number of violent hate crimes in the U.S. went down, it still went up against gay people. So citing the FRC shooting as one example of violence against Christians really erases daily violence that happens against both gay and transgender people. So I just want to state,
yes,
that, you know, that incident is unfortunate and tragic,
right,
but
right,
it's not really representative of the so-called culture wars, so I think it's important to separate that out.
And you do acknowledge, and I can just tell from your demeanor that you will, you do acknowledge that Orthodox Christianity, what I hear from my pulpit on a Sunday morning, would completely and utterly condemn any act of violence towards somebody who practices homosexuality. That's not Christian doctrine. It's the polar opposite of Christian doctrine to engage in bullying or physical attacks of any sort or psychological bullying. None of that is the character of Christ. That's separate from moral disapproval. I mean, you would see the distinction there, right?
I would, but, you know, what I worry about, and I see this because I write about these issues every day, is that the moral disapproval translates for others into certain behaviors. And so if we are regularly promoting this idea that people who are gay, you know, are sinning and should be condemned or rejected by society for their behavior, as you often put it, I'm sorry, I'm using a general you there, but, you know,
we're
usually defined by behavior as opposed to by our identities, that a lot of people receive that as there's something wrong with people who are gay. There's a reason to object to people who are gay. There's a reason to fear that gay people are predatory and things like that. And so your own moral disapproval might not directly translate into violence yourself, but when other people hear that message, it adds to this stigma that permeates society and sort of creates this idea that it's okay to hurt people that are gay, or important to hurt people who are gay.
Well, let me ask you a question then, and this isn't meant to be a smart aleck, but to me, what you're doing there is you're setting up this notion that Christians who do not teach violence against homosexuals, but actually teach it's loving to try to offer the redemptive love of Jesus Christ to homosexuals, or those practicing homosexuality, that they become responsible for those acts of violence, even though they're teaching the opposite. And here is the analogy that I would give. Michelle Obama's big push right now is the Let's Move campaign. If you If you went to any school, and I teach in a public high school, the group in the United States of the bullied kids, the biggest group of bullied kids in America are the overweight kids. There's no question about it. The obese kids are the ones that are targeted for the teasing and the joking, and it's awful to watch take place. Now, Michelle Obama sees childhood obesity as a problem. She sees it as an issue that needs to be resolved, so she draws attention to it. She even went out and suggested to parents that they need to be careful about what they're eating, because you can't preach that you need to be active and then you sit on your couch all day. So she's out there advocating this idea that being overweight is bad. Now, if somebody out there decides, well, look, the president's wife, she's even out there talking about how we need to be thin. Look at Fatso over there, and uses that as motivation to further ostracize overweight kids, it would be beyond a stretch for me to look at Michelle Obama and call her a bully, or call her the source of violence or bullying against fat kids, wouldn't it? And to me, that's kind of what you're doing here when you suggest that Christian ministers who are teaching to take the love of Christ to those who are caught up in a sin of many, that they're responsible for the violence. Did you follow that? I hope you did, because this is a pivotal point for Christians to make relative to the question of moral disapproval. If a Christian's moral disapproval of homosexuality is the equivalent not only to bullying, but also motivating and inciting and providing an impetus for others to hurt those who practice homosexuality, if that's what we're going to conclude, then would it not also stand to reason that people who morally disapprove of overeating, like the First Lady of the United States, and try to encourage people to live a healthier lifestyle relative to a better diet, that they are responsible for creating an environment where bullying of overweight people can take place? Certainly not many people would accuse Michelle Obama's efforts to make kids healthier. Not many would accuse her of being a bully. And yet, when Christians encourage a healthier, a wiser, a better lifestyle choice than homosexuality, that's the first label that's thrown. So how would my friend Zach Ford answer? Is Michelle Obama a bully? You'll hear the answer after this.